You're listening to Productive Flourishing. Thanks for joining us today.
It's easier to trust someone else than to actually go and do the work and find out if the doctor's advice is the best advice, because going to get a second opinion or learn about nutrition takes some work, takes some effort. It's easier to just like trust someone and then blame it afterwards than actually learning the skills and reading and, you know, getting all the relevant knowledge to really choose if you trust someone. So yeah, of course it's easier. And as you said, it's like it's someone that I can always blame later on, so it's not on me. And of course, when it's us, so we have to work harder. We have to take the responsibility, and we have to go through the process. And most people, it's easier for them not to go through the process.
That was Ronan Gaffney, the founder of FreshBiz and the co-author of The New Entrepreneurs, Changing the Way You Play Life. In this episode, we discuss the importance of going all in and betting on yourself, as well as some of the misconceptions of what it means to go all in. We also discuss some of the counterintuitive truths about entrepreneurship, especially as it relates to how you're charging for your value. I'm Charlie Gilkey, and this is Productive Flourishing. Welcome to Productive Flourishing, where we explore how to do the work that matters so you become your best self in the world. I'm your host, Charlie Gilkey, and I'm joined by Angela Wheeler and other guests who will share their stories, insights, wins, and challenges in the hopes that our journeys and stories will help you with yours. Now, on to the show. Ronan, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Charlie. It's my pleasure.
As we were talking about this particular episode, one of the things that came up is the idea of going all in your either entrepreneurial or creative pursuit. Because I think, Ronan, what we've both seen is that people become super hesitant when it's time to actually start actualizing their idea and moving forward. And in many ways, that trips them up. And I also think, you know, as we talked about it, that there's some false conceptions about what going all in means and how frequent we actually do that. So from your perspective, let's sort of unpack that a little bit and pull everybody into the conversation. What does going all in mean?
So I think that, you know, first of all, we need to really understand like the different types of going all in, because as you say all in, and as we use it, I think that most people kind of have like the mental picture of someone putting all the chips in a poker game in the middle of the table and like, this is it, like I'm going for everything. And when you do that, there are like three types of like going in. One is that, you know, you simply stupid, you have no concept of how the game actually works and you just put everything in. So this is, of course, out of the question. This is not the type of all in that we are talking about. Not just like being stupid about something, just like throwing yourself into something that you have no skills or no idea how it works. So that's not the type we are talking about. The second type is, you know, when you think you can get you can fool the entire table. You know, you have a lousy hand and you think you can fool the entire table, and you're taking a very big risk, and you depend on everyone else like buying into your lie, let's say. That's also not one that I'm talking about. I'm only talking about like the third one, when you know that you have a winning hand and you're willing to risk something to really go for it. As long as you know that, you know, this is tonight's game and tomorrow you might have another game and you're not betting your entire life on this specific hand. You just trust yourself enough to have a winning hand so you can take the risk. So first of all, this is the one that I'm talking about. This is the all-in that I'm talking about. But I see so many different entrepreneurs, and I work with thousands around the globe, that they are really afraid to take that move, even if they know they have a winning hand. And I'll explain like what's a winning hand in a second. But I think that what's more important than that is kind of the false notice that we have, that we think that we don't go all in, that we keep ourselves safe, that we are responsible. And, you know, we are taking like measured steps into, you know, leaping into whatever we do. But that's not the true story. The true story is that we do all kinds of different all-ins in all kinds of aspects in our lives. For example, you know, we send our kids to school So it's all in with the educational system. We trust the system that they will give our kids the proper education to actually be effective in the world after that. We go all in with putting our money in the bank. We're going all in with going to the doctor and trust the doctor with our health. And we all know that, you know, doctors are wrong and banks are falling down and educational systems are so irrelevant, and we still keep like putting all our chips in those systems. But when it comes to actually put all the chips on us, on our skills, on our abilities, this is when we start like thinking and rethinking and doubting and all of that. So I want to kind of want to flip this. I want to ask people, first of all, to have a million questions before they put the money in the bank or the kids in school, which is more important, and learning how to trust themselves more and really being able to go all in for them. Because I think the idea at the end of the day is to really become someone that you are willing to go all in for, being that someone for yourself.
I think it's one of the reasons that we sort of abdicate those questions, or sort of we give those external institutions a blank check, is because then we, you know, if it doesn't work out, we have somebody to blame. You know, it's like the doctor was wrong, the school was wrong, the bank. I did the right thing. It didn't work out. It's not my fault. But when we bet on ourselves, you do have someone to blame, right? You can't point out to the world. I mean, you can, but you just have to work harder, right? Yeah. To pull up the story where it's somebody else's fault that your idea didn't work or something like that. And so I think, you know, one of the things at play there is just this sense of personal responsibility and blame. Mm-hmm. With these systems, we think we don't have the personal responsibility, right?
That's completely true. It's like, first of all, we don't have this personal responsibility. And also, you know, it's easier to trust someone else than to actually go and do the work and find out if the doctor's advice is the best advice. Because going to get a second opinion or learn about nutrition takes some work, takes some effort. It's easier to just like trust someone and then blame it afterwards than actually learning the skills and reading and, you know, getting all the relevant knowledge to really choose if you trust someone. So yeah, of course it's easier. And as you said, it's like, it's someone that I can always blame later on. So it's not on me. And of course, when it's us, so we have to work harder, we have to take the responsibility and, we have to go through the process, and most people, it's easier for them not to go through the process.
You realized earlier, or you said earlier that, you know, when you know you've got a winning hand, going ahead and playing it or something along mm-hmm. those lines, right? But I think yes. part of mm-hmm. the challenge is a lot of people, whether they're entrepreneurs or creatives, don't know whether their hand is a winning one or not, right? And even, you know, if we were to keep with the poker analogy, you might have mm-hmm. a pretty good hand, but you can still be beat with that pretty good hand, right? Because you don't know what else is on the table. Might be overstretching the metaphor there. How does one determine whether they have a good hand or not?
So first of all, it's a great question, because it's really about that. It's really about really understanding what a good hand is. And I think that the difference between poker and entrepreneurship, for example, is that when you talk about entrepreneurship, first of all, there can be more than one winner. So it's not about having the best hand on the table. It's just about having a good hand. And that's a difference, because you're not focusing on, is anyone somewhere out there have a better hand than me? Because probably someone does. Someone is always like smarter, better looking, more talented, has more money. It's like, it's always true. So if we come from the approach that I need to have the best hand, then it's a failure to start with. But the good thing about business is that you don't have to be the only one that's winning, and you don't have to be number one. You can just win the game. That's a major part of what we do in FreshBiz, in our workshops, in Through the Game. It's teaching people that there are all kinds of different wins. So having a winning hand, as I see it, is just like being able to understand that, first of all, you know how to learn, because you're never going to have all the answers in advance. You're always going to face new questions, and you will always have to find new answers. So first of all, you need to believe in yourself that you know how to learn the right skills and to get the right information. So the ability to learn is number one. And I think that the second element, which is also very important, is to understand and to know that you can handle the falls and the punches that you are going to get, because you are going to get punched. If you think that you're going to go on the path of entrepreneurship or starting a business or finding a life partner, whatever, without getting punched in your face while doing this, then you're wrong, because you are going. That's life. That life is a chaos, and you know, shit happens. So I think the idea is to know that you're going to fall, but you know how to stand up again and keep on working. So if you have those two elements, the ability to know that you know how to learn and to get the skills and the knowledge, and you know that you're going to face challenges that you will know how to overcome, because this is the path that you're choosing to go. This is like having a winning hand. It's not like just jumping stupidly into something, which means you know that you're going to face challenges, but you have the power to overcome them. Then that's a good start. That's a good hand, as I see it.
Well, I would like to add two things to this. One is the mindset, a flexible mindset, and knowing when you need to trade cards. You know what I mean? Knowing that this idea Definitely. That you had, you know, the most of, unless you were raised in an entrepreneurial family and you kind of have it like baked in you, most of our first ideas are not the best ones, right?
Definitely. And you always have to pivot.
Yeah. And you always have to pivot, and you always have to know. And so there's this art of knowing when it's hard because you're breaking ground, or knowing when it's hard mm-hmm. because it's just not a good idea. You know,
definitely.
And yeah. I can't give like the 7-step formula for that. but that's just one of those, is knowing when to hold and when to fold, you know, that kind of whatnot. I'd say definitely. The second one is just being better at the basics. I mean, I think so many entrepreneurs mm-hmm. think that they have to beat Apple and everything that Apple mm-hmm. does, when really they have to beat the business down the street that's doing terribly. You know, yeah. if you were to go competitively. And so mm-hmm. it's really the basics yeah. sometimes of following up when people email you, or knowing, like being able to listen and knowing when someone is hedging on a sales conversation, or, you know, following up with that sales conversation and make an invitation, or, you know, as Seth would say, care more, right? There's some of these basic yeah, things definitely. that I think mm-hmm. that people don't realize are the foundation for entrepreneurial and creative and life success, that actually, if you focus on those foundations, you can, you know, have a mediocre idea and trade up, right? You can have a bad idea and trade up and work it through, but not if you don't have these foundational skills that will keep you in the game and keep you, you know, attentive and keep you in the right mindset for success. And so I would add those two on there. I know they're probably, you know, part of the things that you mentioned earlier, but I think, you know, knowing when to stick and when to pivot, and two, knowing just the core things that customers value and prospects value, and sticking to that knitting can take you a really, really long way.
Definitely. I totally agree. It's definitely about mindset. It's always about mindset, because this determines everything, because every time you come across a challenge or you fall or everything, what gets you back in the game is always the mindset. And definitely the basic skills just give you a better hand to start with. Just instead of like starting with those 2 and 7, just like start with a king. It's so important, really. It's so important to just know the basics, because, as you said, it's not about beating the big ones. I don't think it's even about beating someone else. I think it's just like being able to bring value into the market. So if you have the basics covered and you can focus on your uniqueness and on the value that you bring, so it's much easier than just like really learning the basics and then thinking about your value and then bringing it to the market. You really start from a better position. So I totally agree.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I go the competitive angle is because the world is moving more and more into an attention economy. And, you know, whatever businesses out there already have people's attention and loyalty, you got to figure out, you know, what to do with that and how do you get the attention and loyalty that, one business has if you're in a relevant spot. And so, I mean, there's always new customers right. rolling in. But I think, you know, when we look at business, it is both sides of the coin. It's where is the cooperation and co-creation? That's sort of one side of the coin. And where's the competition, the real competition? And knowing both elements and which one is the important one in any given conversation. Obviously, that's a challenging point, right? But I think it's both. Yeah. You know, it's both being able to see the marketplace and where you can get where you can start a beachhead, but also to see the marketplace and see where you can start collaborating.
Exactly. It's I think, as you said, at the end of the day, it's the only competition is about getting the attention of the customer. So it's not about beating someone else. It's just like being unique enough and valuable enough to get this to get the attention you're looking for from the people that you're looking to get the attention from. Because you don't need to get it from everyone. You just need to get it from your clients, your customers. And yeah, that's the only thing we fight over. I think it's the attention span of the clients.
Ronan, I'm curious. Can you tell me a story of when you weren't quite all in on a business or an idea, and what happened, and then how you either got all in or got out of it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I think that the entire story of how Freshbit started is that kind of a story, because just to give our listeners the context of what Freshbiz is, it's a training company that is based on a board game that I developed, and the board game is called Freshbiz as well. And it's kind of the monopoly of the new shared economy. It's like it's a game that teaches you the skills of what I believe is necessary to know and to understand in today's economy, which are exactly the things that we've been talking about here. It's the ability to know how to collaborate when you need to collaborate, how to be creative, how to be proactive, all those things. And the entire business started as an idea to develop a game. It wasn't an idea to develop a business, to start a business. I had no specific, goal, or I had no specific mission that I wanted to achieve. It wasn't a game that developed to deliver a message. It was just like, you know, a spark of an idea of me wanted to create a game, and then I called in two of my friends and we started sketching on a board, and it was a process of about 6 years of designing, testing, redesigning. And I remember that at the end of those 6 years, where I had a lot of fun designing the game and developing the game, I had to make a decision. Is this going to be a business, or this is just another project that I've been, part of? Like, I had tons of those before, and I've been part of also all kinds of different startups and all kinds of different ideas. And it could very much easily been put aside, in those project folders on my laptop, and just forget about it. And for about, I think, over a year, that was the case. I just put it aside. I had the entire game ready, but I wasn't really ready to move forward and turn it into a business. And at some point, I needed to make a decision. Am I going to take this board game into and turn it into a business? And what made the decision even more hard to make was the fact that, because I was kind of like a serial entrepreneur, at that point I already had about $100,000 in debt. Mm-hmm. So how do you actually start a business when you're already into so much debt? Is that a smart move to do? Or should I first of all, find a job, get the debt paid, and then maybe go in and start a business? But then I decided this is too important to put aside longer than it's already been aside, because I start getting those feedback from the people that play the game and the impact that it created in their lives. And I understood that this is the timing. And the all-in decision that I had to make was basically selling the house that I bought 5 years earlier, get to make some profit on it. I needed to sell it, pay back the debts, pay back the mortgage, and take the rest and invest it in starting the business. And that's exactly what I did. So there was a moment when I made a decision that this is the right moment, and I trust myself enough and I trust the game enough to be able to buy back the house and to really turn Freshbiz into a business. So that was my story.
Cool. Well, I'm curious, did you have a family at the time, like a partner and kids or anything like that?
Yeah, wife. My first son was already like 3.5 years old. We had another daughter on the way. So yeah, it wasn't like, you know, I'm free in the world, single, I can do whatever I want. I already had like the commitment of a family.
So if you can, and you feel comfortable doing, like, pull me into that conversation with your wife, right? Because here you are, you know, 100K yeah. in debt, and you got, of all things, a game, and you want to sell the house so that you can pay off the debt and make this thing, which has been, I like to call it a jobby, right? Or I got it from Michelle Woodward, right? It's somewhere yeah. between a job and a hobby. You know, it's all the work of a job without the pay.
It was 100% hobby at that point.
Yeah. And so you want to convert this hobby into a business after, you know, by selling the house when, oh, by the way, you've got a 3.5-year-old kid and a new one on the way. How does that conversation unfold?
Well, first of all, I got to say that it wasn't like a conversation that started out of nothing. It wasn't like just throwing it into the conversation without any preparations, because I met my wife on a self-development course. So our entire journey together is always based on self-development and, you know, pushing the boundaries and really fulfilling our dreams and our goals. So the conversation about selling the house, it wasn't easier, but it has like the infrastructure of self-development, which is very, very important. Because I think that throwing an idea like that into a family situation without having the infrastructure of self-development and you know, taking responsibility over your life and the conversation of fulfilling your goals and your dreams is much harder than when you do have that infrastructure. So I must say for my wife that she came very, very open to the conversation because of all the joint work that we've done up until that point. But it wasn't easy as it is as well, because, you know, a house is something that for her represented, you know, security and like achievements in life. And it's a house that we bought in a new town that we moved into, and we kind of changed all our life to be able to get this house in the suburbs and with the fence and the, you know, and the piece of land around it. So it was a hard decision, but I think the conversation turned into, you know, the difference between a house and a home, and the understanding that even if you sell your house, which are the four walls that you live in, but you keep the home where it's the environment and the family that allows you to fulfill your dreams. So then the question is, what's more important? What actually gives you the security, gives you, like, owning a house is the security, or being in a place where you trust yourself to fulfill your dreams and be able to provide for yourself and your family? I think that's a higher level of security. And I think that a home is a place that lets everyone go and fulfill his dreams within the restrictions of what it means to raise a family. And the entire conversation was around that.
I'm so glad that you mentioned this distinction between a house and a home, especially as it relates to creative work and entrepreneurship and things like that. Because I've sensed, you know, I've worked with lots of folks too. I've sensed that so many people are, I call it creatively constipated, right? Where they have the ideas, they have the inspiration, but they're not pushing it. They're not doing anything and things get super toxic, right? And so they go to work and they have the idea and they want to push it and they want to do something with it and they can't because they're at work. And then they go home and because of different things, they can't do it there. And so it really becomes that these places end up becoming just these material places that they go to, you know, back and forth, but they don't have that deeper sort of spiritual element where work is this sort of sacred place where you go and, you know, do work that, you know, is very meaningful and valuable. And when you go home, it doesn't have that same sense of feeling. They're just not everywhere they go. They're not really there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And so I'm glad you pulled that out because that I think that's a challenge that people don't put on the table. It's like, yeah, I've got the house and I've got the two cars and I've got the good neighborhood, but fundamentally, it doesn't actually have any meaning for me because I'm not doing that thing that I'm being called to do or that I've been putting off for 10 years.
Exactly. And I think that really the infrastructure of, you know, the self-development process is very, very important because, as we said before, it's always about the mindset and it's always about the story you choose to tell yourself. When you're making a move, because you know the other conversation that we had, which was like more of a financial conversation about what it means to keep the house and what it means to sell the house. You know, another question that I asked my wife is, do you want to, you know, stay and keep on living in this specific house for the next 20 years or 30 years until we finish with the mortgage? And she said, no, at some point I would like to move. I don't want to stay I don't want to find myself in 20 years living in a 20 years old house that was like suitable for when we were 20, but I don't think would be suitable when we will be 60. So the conversation went to, so this is actually a financial decision because if at some point we're going to sell, which would be the best point to sell? Do you think we're going to make more money on the house by raising its value than we can do with our business? And then it came back to the conversation of, do we trust ourselves enough with the money to really build a business that would be worth much more than the house itself? And if it's a financial transaction now, and if we trust ourselves to build something that later on we'll be able to buy the house again or to buy another house again, this is again a conversation of, do I trust myself enough to build something which will be more valuable? And are we willing to go on the path of learning whatever we need to learn and working on those skills and you know, getting those punches and standing up again and really move forward and build something? And it was a joint decision to go there because what's the alternative? Not doing it? Not doing it, I think it's a much sadder life than owning your own house, but not really feeling there as a place that you can really live the life you want to live. So who cares about the house anymore?
Yeah, the house is temporary no matter what. You know, exactly. Whether it's temporary of 5 years or whether it's temporary of 15 years, that changes the conversation, right? You know, but I think that pulls out an important point because so often, you know, we kind of started this on going all in. I think it's the emotional anchors that we give to some of the different things in our lives like this. Like if a house means eternal security, right? This particular house and this particular place means eternal security and stability. Then you're actually blocked out of a lot of options because you can't ask the question, might we be happier or more secure somewhere else? Because this house in this place and time is what that meant. So you have to sort of dislodge some of these emotional defaults that we'll place on different things. And I think we can do that like on our job. Like our job might mean security and in that certain way. But if having a job is the only way you can be secure, then it's going to block, obviously entrepreneurship is going to block probably some creative activities and things like that. But we can't ask the question, like, you know, how many people have you seen who have thought that a job meant security and stability, only to walk in one day and be laid off, and there's nothing they could do about that, right? And so it seems secure, it seems stable, but really the most stable foundation that we have in this world is, you know, our sort of personal foundation and the communities in which we place ourselves into. And those can remain stable, but the jobs and the houses and the cars and all the stuff, it comes and goes. That's the way of things.
Definitely. It's just about being able to reframe the story that we tell ourselves about life, about jobs, about security in general, about all those different things. Because, yeah, as you said, I think it's if we build a strong foundation of ourselves, really trusting ourselves, and then trusting like the world we live in, and that can be your community or just like general trust in the universe that it will follow up and meet you halfway to be able to fulfill your mission in life, then I think that's a secret. The secret is like the balance between trusting yourself and trusting the universe to have a successful game in life. Because what else do we actually have more than that? Nothing is more sustainable than really trusting yourself and trusting the world.
So speaking of games, you mentioned earlier that your original idea was that FreshBiz was just going to be the game that you were selling, correct?
Yes.
How did you, or tell us about how you determined that like either the game wasn't going to be enough or that there was this thing that people were really buying, which was the training. So tell us, how did that emerge?
So first of all, I personally been through the process, as I said before, of self-development, and then I went into coaching. So I had the background of being able to create a workshop, to create a learning process. And when I start, you know, seeing people playing the game, at the beginning it was kind of weird to me that they came back after like a few days of playing the first game, telling me that this is more than just a game for them. They're also starting to do things differently in their businesses, in their relationships. And I found it quite strange, because for me it was a game. When I played a game, I simply saw it as a game, and then, you know, I went on with whatever I had to go on with. But for them it was more meaningful. And then I had to like take a deeper look. And what I understood is that things that came kind of natural to me wasn't that obvious to other people. So the way that I saw, for example, collaborations in the game or opportunities or the ability to spend money and not be so attached to it, like other people had all kinds of different stories about it. So what I had to do is like, I, first of all, for me personally, I had to understand the process that they're going through. So I needed to understand what's in the game, what's in the gameplay is actually, you know, triggers all of that. And what I did is kind of a reverse engineering of the game. I kind of like took a deeper look into the game and I tried to understand what is the mechanism of the game that generates this behavior or understandings or insights in them. And because I came from the background of coaching, so I said, okay, I'll do a game, but then I'll also explain what just happened to you in the game, so you will have kind of the perspective of what you just went through. And that was like a basic, very very short workshop, like 2 hours or something. They played the game for like 90 minutes, and then I gave them like 30 minutes of insights, but then they asked more, and then they asked more, and then it became like a three-hour workshop, and then it became a full day, and then it became a weekend. It's kind of like grew organically because people was looking for better understanding. Because I think that what people find mostly interesting is a better way to understand themselves. If you can provide them that, that's like the most interesting subject anyone can talk about, because it's like people really want to better understand why they do what they do and how they can change the thing they don't like into something that serves them better. So the entire process was about really understanding how the game generates it and explain it to them. And then later on, in I think in the past like 2 years or so, then we actually really started generating more and more new content that can really give people skills, you know, to be able to succeed and thrive in today's economy, because there is so much around us now in the, you know, in the new shared economy that people need to understand, because we are really shifting many of the basic beliefs about business and entrepreneurship and what's possible. So we started adding more and more knowledge into it and you know, tweak the game and like come up with new ideas and new goals and new ways to play the game to really teach those skills. But at the beginning, it was really just the idea to be able to understand and explain, first of all, to myself and then to others, what's in the game that actually makes them think differently.
That's fantastic. You know, I was just, you may or may not know this, I'm a tabletop gamer. So I'm like, man, the expansion packs cool that you can have for this. And so, yeah, I mean, what's great about games like this, because I'm looking at two right now, and one is Transformation, which is a personal transformation game. And the other, I think, is Sacred River, I think is the name of it. What's really great about these games is that they enable you to get outside of yourself and see yourself. Because, you know, it's so hard to read the label when you're stuck inside the jar.
Definitely.
And that's what these games do. They externalize your, I mean, I haven't played your game, but I imagine, right, mm-hmm. that you know, yeah, it externalizes different values. It externalizes different goals. It externalizes different challenges. And when we can get outside of ourselves and see those challenges from a distance, they become a lot easier to solve, which, I mean, of course, which is why we're both employed as coaches, right? Because that's what we do. Mm-hmm. We pull these challenges and values and things out and can put an external view on them. And so that's fantastic. And it's interesting how that emerges, right? That what I wanted to call out, because it happens for a lot of entrepreneurs, is the thing that's most natural and easiest for you that you don't even think about is the thing that other people latch onto is incredibly valuable. And what exactly. I'll remind our listeners about is it's counterintuitive, but the things that's the most natural to you are the things you should be charging the most for. We get it wrong. We charge more for the things that are hard for us. And that way we end up working our tails off doing things that are hard for us.
Because exactly. I see a lot of people that, you know, they find it challenging to charge a lot for what's easy for them, because they think if it's that easy, how can I charge so much money for it, when they don't understand like the value that it really have for other people, that it's not that easy for them. And I think that's a big step for every entrepreneur, just to understand that, yeah, what's come natural for me, it's my gift, and my gift is the most precious thing that I can offer. That's the biggest value that I can offer. And of course, I should charge accordingly. And that's a big step for a lot of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I mean, it's two big steps. One is seeing it in the first place, right? Seeing that this gift that you have and seeing and owning that, that's the hard part. The second part is in charging for it, right? But, you know, you can get stuck in either place. And plus, we have all these sort of myths around hard work, and that the harder you work, the more you deserve, mm-hmm. and things like that, that end up hijacking it. And I think the conclusion of some of those myths and our following of them is that we end up in careers and businesses that are really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And the hard day in, day out, and, you know, we're scared and we're always in that place of struggle and strife. Just because this foundational mindset belief that, you know, the harder you work, the more you deserve. You know, I think there could be another way that I would want people to play with. The more natural it comes to you, the more that you can earn and the more value that you can provide.
Definitely. That's like the universe law of minimum effort.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So the game is emerging. You've gone all in. You know, that's a really interesting. I'm curious. What are the parts of the business now where you're starting to come up to that going all in edge point? You know what I mean? Like, businesses grow, mm-hmm. we have to make different decisions. Are you currently on the cusp of having to make that one yet again?
Yeah, I think it's a constant thing, because always, you know, you put your goals a bit higher than you can jump, And you can always need to come up with those new skills and new commitments. I think that now is kind of the commitment to go all in globally, because at the moment we are active in over 20 countries, but we came to the point that we really need to travel more, and being able to travel more is a big all in, because you really need to be committed to be away from your family, to spend the time, to spend the money, to really go and grow your business around the globe. So I think that's the all in that I'm standing in front of at the moment, is really being able to choose that I'm all in for the next level of my business, which is really building it as a global successful business that I get to be presented in different countries, because now we do it through other facilitators and other partners. But I need to step forward and actually be present in some of them. So that's the next leap of all in that we are facing at the moment.
Are there any particular stories or challenges that are in front of you that are keeping you from just jumping in that way?
Number one is family, of course, because it's spending time away from my kids and my wife. So I think that's the major one. Second one is it's pretty tiring to fly so much to so many different places, you know, getting those jet lags and jumping back and forth, because you know, from going to the US to going to Asia, you kind of like jumping like 12 hours from one to another. So you have to build it in the right way. And the second thing is that there are so many different opportunities, just like choosing the right places to go to, because you can't go to too many places in a year. That's a challenge. So just like smartly choose the hands you want to play and then go play all in with those hands. That's the game now.
That is the game. You know, I'm wondering whether I'm going to ask this question. Yeah, I'm going to ask it now that I've what's your sufficiency point? I mean, and the reason I ask this is a lot of times in entrepreneurship, we talk about growth, mm-hmm. but we don't talk about sufficiency when we're at the level that is the right level for our lives, all things considered, right? And so you're right, mm-hmm. absolutely. Making a global jump, going from a regional sort of business to a global business, that's a pretty big jump, all things considered.
Yeah.
And so, mm-hmm. you know, what came up for me, and this is just how I think, is like, okay, well, is the regional level the right level that all things considered with mm-hmm. your kids and with your family and with your values, you're at the perfect level? Mm-hmm. Or is it that next level? I don't know, but I'm just curious about that.
Yeah. So first of all, we are already a global business.
Okay.
So it's not the choice between staying local or going global, because we are already global. It's more of the choice about me personally. Am I going to be global? Am I going to present myself and stand in front of the audience and deliver my message personally, globally? So that's kind of the point that I'm at. And, you know, there are two ways to look at the business at this point. One is like my business goals, okay? And I can definitely achieve my business goals staying locally in Israel and running a global business. So it's not about the business goals that's not the reason that I'm doing it. The reason that I'm doing it has to do more with my mission in life than the business aspect of it. And I think that part of my mission in life is to personally deliver my message in different places around the globe, because there are parts of the message that at this point I think only I can deliver. So although I already, you know, took the effort and created a mechanism that can teach other people to deliver the FreshBiz message, part of it I still need to deliver myself, so I can train more people to be more accurate with the way they deliver it. Because the idea behind FreshBiz is to really, you know, elevate a global mindset, and I need to be in different places to be able to deliver this specific message to people from different backgrounds and different cultures. So it's more has to do with my mission than the business. And I think that after I will do that for another year or two, I think that will be sufficient for me, because I would know that by then I will have the right people that can keep on delivering the message. And then maybe I can, you know, come every once in a while and take it to the next level. But it will definitely be sufficient that after I will understand and I will have the knowledge that I have enough people that can deliver the correct message, and then I can come back home and rest for a while.
Seems like you got it figured out.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
we'll see in a couple of years.
Yeah, definitely.
So as the guest on today's episode, you get to leave our listeners with either an invitation or a challenge to do something from, you know, what we've talked about from this particular episode. So what would you like to invite or challenge our readers or our listeners to do?
Whoa, okay. I think that I would like to invite them to go all in for something and really go all in for something that they feel comfortable enough that they could learn all they need to learn on the path to achieve it, and they're willing to, you know, get punched and stand up again and move forward. So just like take something, some area in your life that you are willing to just like really go in and trust yourself to be successful and do it. Go for it. Like put aside the doubt for a second, understanding, knowing that you have a winning hand just because you are who you are, and go for it.
Ronan, thanks again for joining me today. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you very much, Charlie. It was my pleasure. It was really fun.
All right, listeners. So you heard it from Ronan. What idea, what project, what mission have you been holding back on that you can go all in on in the next week? Just three steps that you can take. They don't have to be the perfect steps. They don't have to be the best step. Just three steps that you could take between now and the next week to go all in on that idea, that goal, or that mission. Until next time, stand tall. Thanks for listening to Productive Flourishing. To get more resources that'll help you finish the work that matters and be your best self in the world, head on over to productiveflourishing.com. If this episode warmed your heart or got your wheels turning, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a review for the podcast on iTunes.